98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
Good morning and welcome.
The world.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio
really
show that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning. Happy Friday, Valley sports fans. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, and of course, on Fridays, the day for Jarrett Carlin to shine. We are entering a football weekend where we do not have a local game on Sunday, but man, do we have one on Monday.
Extra day of buildup.
Yeah. Yeah,
Monday night football.
Yeah, and once again, the Valley vibe thing. I know I'm obsessed with this topic, but you wonder exactly where the hearts of the casual sports fan are with this football team. And if they're not with the Cardinals now, this would be a very, very, very good day to make that. Monday would be a very, very good day to make that happen.
Totally agree with you.
You know, yeah. And I think that's what we have going into this game. I think this is more of a, okay, prove it. Prove it that you're a good offense. Prove it that you can do it on a big stage. And you know what else there is? There's a lot of, we've had a lot of trauma in big event football.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're also not that far removed in the Valley of being regular participants in big nationally televised football games. I was just taking a look back. It seems like it was 1,000 years ago, but we're 4 or 5 years from some pretty impressive prime time accomplishments for the Arizona Cardinals. So, yeah.
This is also what it's sort of like an audition for the Cardinals, that this could be the launching pad, that they could become one of those it teams that next year maybe gets a lot of.
Well, when you think about it, when you think about when the Cardinals became really good the last time, it like just happened overnight. For 5-6 weeks into the season, they were just kind of trying to get it together, and then they started killing people. And then it was 20-point victories routinely. And I believe we had 6 of those that year with Bruce Arians. We're waiting for this Kyler Murray team to elevate, to really, truly elevate. We've seen him elevate at times. Need to see the football team elevate.
Touchdowns. You're using your own moniker for this. I like that.
Yeah.
The elevate.
See? Yeah. All right. I know how to brand my own concepts, Murata. Right? So this is great. And we're going to have an extra day of buildup on Monday to discuss this in the context of what goes down on Sunday. So I'm excited. It's Friday. We're going to have fun because that's what we do. Start the show, Carlin.
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
The Splash. Friday, October 16th. 2020. We start, of course, with the Arizona Cardinals as they continue getting ready for the Dallas Cowboys Monday night in Arlington. Yesterday, 4 players unable to practice. They were linebackers Kylie Fitz and Dennis Gardeck, defensive lineman Rashard Lawrence, guard J.R. Sweezy, Devon Kennard, who's working his way back from a calf injury, was a limited participant. Cardinals also officially placed linebacker Chandler Jones on injured reserve and signed Isaiah Irving off of Denver's practice squad. Prior to his time with the Broncos, Irving, the linebacker, spent 3 years with the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
I heard Gambo talk about it yesterday. Special team / depth guy. Again, we'll see, and we'll get into it a lot today, on how the Cardinals defensively, starting with their coordinator and their game plan, deal with the loss of Chandler Jones against a very, very dangerous offense with Dak Prescott or Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I think this Cowboys team has a lot of potential offensively, so that's going to be a big storyline.
Completely agree with you. It's a powerful offense, but it's also Andy Dalton. And this is a game where a defensive coordinator, if you're really good at what you do, you can influence this game. You can make an impact. You can throw the Cowboys off their mark. There's a lot of ways you can do it.
The Indianapolis Colts became the latest team to shut down their facility after a number of positive COVID-19 tests surfaced, but They've already announced that all four tests were false positives, so their game against Cincinnati Sunday is on as scheduled. The Atlanta Falcons, who had previously vacated their facility because of COVID testing, they've been cleared to reopen things today. They'll play at Minnesota on Sunday. And then just minutes before we go on the air, the New England Patriots canceled their Friday practice and player interviews after another positive COVID-19 test. They're awaiting confirmation on a second positive test. They are scheduled to host the Denver Broncos on Sunday. That game's already been rescheduled once.
You wonder why this is happening to individual players in the NFL. You wonder about all these false positives and how reliable the system is. If the system is this glitchy, maybe it would be best for the rest of the world not to know about it until these tests are confirmed. But the Patriots have already they've already burned their bye week. And so if there's a cancellation involving them, now we're looking into logistical problems for the NFL.
Wednesday night football.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Thursday morning football.
Doubleheader.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell made his choice after being cut by the New York Jets. He signs with the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Not expected to be a factor this week, which will be the Monday tune-up. The first of the Monday night doubleheader, Bills and Chiefs. But there's a lot of reaction to that. Bell's got the right attitude. He's going to a very talented offense in terms of targets. His production was down with the Jets. I think this will be an opportunity. When he gets up to speed, we'll see an opportunity to see if his reduced production with the Jets was more Jets or more him.
Well, yeah. Yeah, what I mean, right. Look,
the Jets are definitely to blame for some of it.
Well, listen, I think Lev Bell in Kansas City with all those weapons around him, I'm fairly certain he's going to succeed. I don't know how often he's going to touch the football. They probably could use a better rushing attack to kind of get that passing attack going. I'm surprised he didn't take Buffalo, but this is a cleaner route to a championship, and that might be what he's after.
Houston Astros fought off elimination for the second straight day. Carlos Correa hits a walk-off solo home run off of Nick Anderson, giving the Astros a 4-3 win. Tampa Bay still leads the series 3-2. Game 6 on tap in San Diego today at 3:07. Have you seen the stories about the guy, the White Sox fan, who lives in downtown San Diego megaphone?
Love it.
The New York Times caught up with the guy. They got pictures from inside the apartment, but he's just yelling players' names for the Astros through his megaphone. Carlos Correa, you're a cheater. Shame on you.
Right, right. And he's doing it from a balcony of an apartment that offers him a great look and a great way to do it. It kind of warmed my heart a little bit that at least they're getting some grief, Vinny.
At least some. I mean, it's a millionth of what they would have had under normal circumstances. And I think even the little bit of grief that they have, again, is bringing this team together. They underachieved. They've had injuries. But here they are, 2 games away from completing this comeback and getting back to the World Series. The Atlanta Braves are 1 game away from their first World Series appearance since 1999. They beat up on the Dodgers last night, game 4 of the NLCS. Marcelo Ozuna homered twice, drove in 4 runs for Atlanta, who tagged Clayton Kershaw for 4 runs on 7 hits over 5 innings. Now, Dave Roberts brought him out for the 6th, and that's when the troubles began.
Listen, the fact that playoff Kershaw has reemerged, this is a very dark day for Dodgers fans. If you've been judging their reaction, because now they're on the precipice, the idea of them sort of reestablishing their superiority in Game 3, that lasted 1 game, and they're gripping. They're gripping. Dodger fans are in the midst of a big pity party right now.
Yep. Game 5 tonight in Arlington. Multiple SEC schools will have revenue from the conference deducted as a result of not following proper COVID-19 protocols, according to a report from ESPN. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey sent out a memo last week. Schools will have their conference revenue distribution cut by $100,000 for each week they do not follow protocols. And apparently from the rash of outbreaks in SEC territory, there's going to be a lot of schools affected by that $100,000 a week.
Okay, yeah.
And this is on the day before a big SEC game, the biggest college game of the year so far between Alabama and Georgia.
Well, what I'm looking at in this game is you've got Nick Saban, who is the greatest college football coach of all time. and you've got a guy who's an absolute control freak. There is no way he's not going to be on the sideline for this. I would bet dollars to donuts, if you will, whatever that means, that somehow, some way, Nick Saban will test negative three consecutive times and he'll be on that field Saturday. He was on a radio show yesterday bitterly complaining that he couldn't communicate with his team from home. They won't allow it because you have to be in the press box to do it, and they can't let him in the stadium. If he doesn't test positive.
Somehow that'll change.
It will change. There's no way in the world.
They're constructing a bubble in a press box suite right now.
You watch.
The coach.
Miraculously, Coach Saban will be cured.
Finally, Phoenix Rising FC. They're in the Western Conference semis of the USL Championship playoffs. They will travel to Reno to take on Reno 1868 FC tomorrow at 6. That game can be heard on ESPN 620 AM and streamed live on ArizonaSports.com. There you go. There's your splash for Friday, October 16th. Cardinals heading into the weekend, getting ready for the Dallas Cowboys. We'll give you the latest with all things Redbird next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Going back home, playing in Dallas, obviously a big game for us on Monday night in front of everybody.
I mean, this is what he's worked hard for his entire life, to have moments like this.
Baby! Certainly, it'll be worthy of the national stage.
Bickley and Murata talk Cardinals, Cowboys, Monday Night Football, now.
It's heartbreaking. I mean, I've had a great relationship with Chandler since we drafted him, and I don't know if that stat is still accurate, but at one point he was, led the NFL in sacks since the time we traded for him. And the person, I mean, he's the kind of guy that, reaches out to my kids and is certainly a fan favorite. I mean, the guy is such a likable person and a great human. So it's really hard for us to see, And I said this weeks ago that there are certain players you cannot replace, and you can't replace Chandler Jones. Now, collectively, as a group, we all have to step up, but you can't replace Chandler Jones. I mean, unfortunately, Deacon Jones in his prime is not out there, but you have to do the best you can, and you got to continue to work the waiver wire. You got to look at trade options, and those are moving parts that happen every day.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, this morning with Doug and Wolf. I found that really funny because in our conversations earlier this week, I think off the air, you said, why don't they just go after Deacon Jones?
Yeah.
Do you have a pipeline to Steve Keim?
I don't know.
Are you feeding him?
No. But that to me, I think the Cardinals have made it very clear that they do not have a comfort level bringing in guys they don't have information on or history with. And I'm not certain they're not alone. I mean, I do think that this is kind of the way everyone in the NFL is acting right now. But I do think really that for all the talk about who might come in off the street to help this football team, I think you've got to look at whether or not you can replace Chandler Jones. And so if right now you're looking, if Steve Keim has a little bit of petty cash in the drawer left to address payroll in 2020, it would be silly right now to spend that on a tight end or on a running back like Lev Bell or on a defensive back, if you will. You've got to see if you can solve this Chandler Jones issue without Chandler Jones being around. And if you can't, then you're going to have to dip in that money and go do something. Because I got news for you. You're not making the playoffs without a pass rush in the NFL.
So how long do they wait?
Well, I
think
I have been saying all along that I think these next two games going into the bye week should be, if I was the general manager of this football team, there would be a lot on the line for me in terms of the next couple of weeks, such as coming out of that bye week, we better have an offense that is just running like a sports car and dependable and not stalling out all the time. And we better have a defensive coordinator and a defense that's playing at a high level.
Yeah.
Well, and you're coming out of games against the Cowboys and the Seahawks, so now you've got a fair indication. You've got a great offense followed by a great quarterback. So you need now to show me some stuff. And that's the way I'm looking at this.
Yeah, they have two games before the bye, two games before the trade deadline, which falls on November 3rd. And I do believe what Jarrett suggested, this kind of a show me something, couple of games for the Cardinals defense. Mm-hmm. Can they get by and scheme some pressure without Chandler Jones in these next two games? If not, what about trade possibilities? Steve Keim talked about that with Doug and Wolf this morning as well.
I think there's some, you know, again, there's so many things go into a trade. It's two teams that are willing to make it happen. The question of why is a team willing to part with a player that you covet? Then there's the second part, which is the financial part. You know, it's a real thing, especially when you look at whether it's a one-year deal, are you trading for a guy and giving up draft compensation for essentially 10 games with this COVID process? Are you able to benefit from multi-years left on their contract? Mm. There's so many things that go into it that you have to weigh and just do the best thing you can for the organization.
Yeah, I think if they're in a situation, Bic, where they find a way to win these next two games, and you're 5-2 going into the break, but you're having a little bit of trouble generating pass rush, I think Steve Keim then probably gets the okay. You want to trade some draft picks? You want to see what's out there in terms of an edge rusher? Let's make a run at this thing.
Yeah.
If that doesn't happen, they don't win these two games, and they struggle to find a pass rush in the two games, I think they're going to go by committee again.
I think the way I look at this, there has been some ups and some downs early on in this season, but there hasn't been a terrible sense of urgency, at least not stated urgency, because we've heard the phrase work in progress a lot from the head coach. And I think the football season, starting Monday night, gets very serious, because if you want to make the playoffs, you've got to be able to hit certain benchmarks at certain times of the season. You can't still be looking for stuff in week 6, week 7. So how they fare in these coming games, I agree with you. I think it's going to kind of dictate where they go, how they approach it, and all of that.
But let me, you think if they struggle in the next two games, then they won't make a deal?
I think if they struggle defensively in the next couple of games, that you could seriously make a case for replacing the defensive coordinator. But it depends on what these games look like. Now, they're coming off of a victory, so that's one of the steps I would look at. And I would also look at the fact that if you got an offense that is producing over 30 points per game, but the defense can't do anything because they can't generate any pass rush, I could see in both cases pursuing another defensive player. Who that would be, I don't know. But it's one thing to make a real effort at it. It's another thing to pick up the phone and call Lorenzo Alexander and say, dude, you want to come in and give us some support here?
Well, I mean, depth is obviously an issue, even if you look at the injury report from yesterday. They have a lot of outside linebackers that are either out for the season or nicks and bruises or working their way back. To answer your question, Jarrett, yeah, I mean, if they're 3-4 at the break in that division and things look bleak, I understand, you know, trying to win games, but I don't know if I would agree with the philosophy of giving up draft capital in the future to bring in a guy for a half a season to maybe qualify for the playoffs.
Well, that's it, though. It's just a funny thing to think about, because if they're struggling the next two games, that's when you say, okay, what they have now is not good enough to fill in for Chandler Jones. They should make a move.
Yes.
Whereas if they win the next two games and they are 5-2, then you say, like, well, maybe what they have is good enough, but that's when you said they should make the move, which I get. It's just it's sort of a tough spot they're in.
Well, but you're looking for absolute plans right now, and I don't think that's not feasible given the fact that you've got to see what these games look like.
It's a work in progress.
Right. You got to see what these games look like, but I do think that you've got to start thinking beyond this now, you know, and hey, you've got a team in the Seattle Seahawks that's sitting there at 5-0, and they're just finding a way to win every game. They should not have beaten the Vikings. They are not falling down.
Bic, we should be talking about a 5-0 team getting ready for Dallas.
We should be.
So if you want, if you're hemming and hawing about that, you know, you had two opportunities to win games against teams that you should have beaten,
and you turned in
flat, lifeless performances
in
back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, and that's the negative stuff. That's the stuff that you look at and go, okay, we're not ready. We're not there yet.
Well, I think this game against Dallas and then the following Sunday against Seattle, obviously chances for those guys currently on the roster to continue to open eyes, maybe carve out a regular spot for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think the number one storyline for this game for the Arizona Cardinals is the performance of their defensive coordinator. We're going to get into this a lot deeper later in the show, but when you lose a player of the quality of Chandler Jones, yeah, it makes things tougher. It's not necessarily a death sentence for your defense or your team, but you got to get creative.
Yeah.
And I'll be watching to see what looks different from Vance Joseph from what we've seen in the previous five games.
Well, and can you throw in wrinkles as a defensive coordinator without blowing up the communication on defense?
Yes.
And that's what a coordinator, that's what the word coordinate means.
Got to coordinate.
Right.
Coordinate.
There's a reason why they're called coordinators. Coordinates. It's a line from Stripes. Just fire the missile soldier.
I'm doing boomerang lines.
Oh, yeah, and I'm
doing Stripes. Both going movies.
Yes, we are.
Sign up for Bigs Picks. Text PICK, P-I-C-K, to 620-620 to get entered and compete for a weekly prize from Pizza Hut. You'll also be competing against Dan Bickley for your chance to win the grand prize of a 75-inch TV courtesy of Corona Extra. Once again, that's PICK, P-I-C-K, to 620-620. Coming up next, the baseball playoffs roll on, and so do those pesky Houston Astros. I almost slipped there. It's Big Boy Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The pitch to Freeman. Swinging a ground ball to the right side and through a base hit. That one's going to get all the way to the wall. Extra bases for Freeman. Acuna comes all the way around to score. Freeman stands at second, and the Braves lead it 2-1.
Things got interesting last night in the sixth inning with Clayton Kershaw on the mound. Freeman with an RBI double. Then Ozuna followed with an RBI double. And Brusdar Graterol came in to replace Clayton Kershaw. He got knocked around. And before it was all said and done, 10-2. Dodgers win game four. So a nice bounce back from the Braves after they got absolutely embarrassed 15-3 the night before. They're one win away from driving the stake through the heart of the Los Angeles Dodgers once
again.
Yeah,
listen, and it's, if you've been monitoring the way Dodgers fans feel this morning, this is a tough day for them because it's not over, but it feels like it's going to be, right?
Yeah.
And you got playoff Kershaw again. That's actually a thing now, playoff Kershaw. His ERA is near 4.5 in postseason starts, which is nonsensical. How does that happen to a pitcher that talented? I get having to get over the hump psychologically of pitching in these big games. I think it happened to Randy Johnson even at one point in time. And then he got over it and he was just money every single time you gave him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Clayton Kershaw is so gettable in the postseason.
It's a great question. Here he was talking about his own struggles in that sixth inning.
It's just kind of part of playing on turf. You know, he kind of chopped that one up. And, you know, Freddie had two strikes on him and probably just went one too many pitches inside. And he hit it good, but it was on the ground. And still with two strikes, probably got to make a better pitch. And, it's a tough way to go for that sixth inning for sure.
So it's added to what you said, this playoff Kershaw mentality that's out there. This is not his first failure. He's now under 500 in terms of decisions in his postseason career. You mentioned the ERA, the lack of, I mean, there's been a couple big games and good pitching performances, but he hasn't been the same pitcher in the postseason.
No.
Here was Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager for now, talking about that narrative and how he doesn't buy into it.
He came out and, you know, five innings, one run, and then, what happened right there in that sixth inning, but he gave us a chance to win the baseball game. You know, we couldn't put any runs up early and get a lead and or hold a lead, you know, after the Eddie home run, but that narrative couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, but at that time, too, the Dodgers had one run on the board on one hit. Rios hit a home run. That was it. That's all they had on the board. They're, you know, with that lineup, and I know you're going up against a good Braves pitching staff, and their starter was rolling yesterday, but you can't have offensive snooze fests like that when you go out and have that kind of lineup. It just shouldn't happen.
Well, and then you think about the corollary of that how much more comfortable Clayton Kershaw would be in games if he had four or five run leads.
Mm-hmm.
If he wasn't in these one run games, inning after inning after inning after inning. Yeah, there's something to be said for that. I totally agree with you. Every year in Major League Baseball's postseason, you seem to get a reminder that playing rotisserie baseball doesn't necessarily work. That the money you spend, even though it feels that way getting to the playoffs, getting there and winning it doesn't necessarily always correlate.
Yeah.
Because you can get these great lineups that are suddenly neutralized by great pitching, or you don't have somebody to lock out good games. You have one piece, you're one piece shy, which makes your $100 million in payroll advantage null and void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what else is not 100%, Vic? Rotisserie chicken also is never 100%.
Right.
Sometimes too dry.
Yeah, it seems like when it's good, it's really good. When it's not good, it's really bad.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
A little too gamey for my
liking. For someone like me who can't cook anything.
That's what it's
a godsend at times.
Yes.
But I got one this week. Not good. Stay away from the word rotisserie is what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
If you want, if you want consistency. The other game last night, the American League game. Every time we think they're gone, they keep coming back.
Pitch on the way. And Correa hits it in the air. Pretty deep to center. Sends back Kiermaier at the wall. See you later and see you tomorrow. The Houston Astros win it in the bottom of the ninth on Correa's walk-off homer, 4-3. And there will be a game six.
That was call on the Houston radio broadcast, obviously.
I had this horribly unsettling thought last night after that game was over. Part of me, for a nanosecond, thought, I might be into that. I might be into watching that. I might be into watching the Astros come all the way back, because I started thinking about how little I would care about a Braves-Rays World Series. And then I flushed that thought immediately because of my contempt for the Houston Astros, but I can't get it out of my head.
You're not wrong, because having someone to root against
at least
is almost as fun as having someone to root for. To not care at all
is apathy. It's death. To not care at all is meaning the World Series is going to be the lowest rated World Series probably of our lifetimes, going up against the NFL.
Probably.
Good luck. But you get the Astros. You've got something. You've got the villain. You know.
Yeah, I know some people are into that, but every game they win, they get closer to achieving the goal that they've set for themselves, again, I think would be an embarrassing look for Major League Baseball.
Would.
Here's Carlos Correa, who apparently went all Babe Ruth and called the shot.
Not a bad. I told Altuve, walking off the field, I said, I'm going to end it. You know, I could feel that my swing was in sync. I could feel that my rhythm was good. I could feel that, you know, I wanted to drive the ball, and I felt like I could do it. So, you know, when he threw me a fastball, I saw it good, and I was able to drive the center field like I wanted to.
Carlos Correa has 2 walk-off home runs in his career, both of them in the playoffs.
I know.
Has never done it in the regular season.
Him and George Springer have been terrific, but it's fascinating to me because not only were the Astros finally kind of meeting karma, because that's what the Jose Altuve story felt like to me. He's kind of got on top of that, and now the Astros have won back-to-back games. It's not. This can't be happening.
Yeah, Dusty
this
Baker,
just can't be happening.
The manager, still acknowledges, hey, there's a lot of pressure on us.
The pressure's still on us because we still got to win, too. But this team has done well and flourished under pressure. And, you know, there's only a few teams that have come back, you know, from 0-3. And, you know, we'd like to join that few.
And that's what makes it at least throws a level of difficulty in completely hating the Astros. And I said this when he got the job. And when the penalties were announced, and Dusty Baker was a stand-up guy. Dusty Baker is the only likable part of the Houston Astros, in my opinion.
And I do like Zach Greinke. Some of the times I'm entertained by him. Most of the times, I think he could be a real jerk face some of the times. But
yeah, and he wasn't there for much of the transgression.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I'll float him a pass too.
And the fact that he went the other way and started telling the batter what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that as a strategy. You wish you could do it more. There's a couple things in baseball that I think should really be expounded upon. If you're a pitcher, start doing that and then mix up the batter by telling him false stuff along the way and then completely get into a batter's head. And it's a lot cleaner than a catcher putting down signs. That's number one. Number two, we both saw the highlight from a Japanese League baseball game.
Taiwan.
Was that Taiwan?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Guy hits a home run over the center field wall. At least he thought it was. The center fielder goes up and robs him of the catch, catches the ball, robs him of the home run, but he comes down after the catch and acts like he does not have the baseball. And he's doing it as a goof. And the guy runs all the way around the bases celebrating. He crosses his own plate, and people are like, wait, he's got the ball.
He casually flips the ball back into the infield.
Right. And then he starts laughing. The center fielder starts laughing, and then the replay show he clearly caught the ball and he was out. It was such a... It was such a next-level troll job, wasn't it?
Yes, but it was also very weird because it created all this confusion on the field. Normally when you see a guy bring a home run back,
yeah,
there's immediate, unavoidable emotion. Hey, look what I did. Look what I got.
Yeah.
And he had none of that. I don't think the guy's a human being. To be able to
I know.
Unless maybe he caught the ball and didn't think he got it and then looked in his glove. I don't know. That's the only explanation I had. It was a very strange highlight.
But I was thinking that would be a great way for some defensive players to get back on the swag showing hitters. If you rob a guy of a home run, play it off, let him go around the bases and then just throw the ball in.
Here's what you would do to get back. If let's say, because Correa admired that home run. So you got somebody really admiring their work, and you're able to catch it, and you're able to hide your emotion. While he's rounding the bases, you should sprint to home plate, and then as soon as he's ready to touch home plate, just hold up the
ball. Show him the ball. That'd be good. Yeah, I like that. I'd sign me up for that.
By the way, how about the Astros yesterday? And we are definitely in different times in baseball. In a high-leverage game like that, both teams basically going with a bullpen game.
Mm-hmm.
The Astros used 7 pitchers yesterday, none of which threw more than 37 pitches.
Yeah, it's a different game.
It is.
Completely different game.
And then you had, on the flip side, a manager in Dave Roberts maybe sticking with Kershaw too long.
Yeah, well, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
So today you got game 6, Astros Rays 3:07, Dodgers Braves game 5, that at 6:08. Both of those games can be heard over on ESPN 6:20 a.m. Coming up next, we got some teams getting back to practice in the NFL, other teams canceling practice. We'll get into that, as well as Le'Veon Bell's new home with the Chiefs. That and more hash marks straight ahead. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Marotta. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
All right, heading into week 6 in the NFL. A little different, obviously, with the Arizona Cardinals not playing until Monday, but there is some scrambling going on in the National Football League. Got the Falcons back at practice. The Colts, in the span of one morning, had positive tests. Then they were deemed to be false positive tests, so they're back at practice. And then, moments before we get on the air, the New England Patriots, they have another positive test. They cancel practice. Their game against the Denver Broncos has already been rescheduled. I would say it's very much in jeopardy at this point. This is life in the NFL right now, but, just from a consumer standpoint, a fan standpoint, it's been exhausting. Imagine how the league schedule makers must feel, especially because you brought it up in the splash too, Bick.
Yeah.
The Patriots and Broncos have already burned their bye week.
Yeah, they burned their bye week, so they don't have really any room to maneuver. There's another interesting possible solution out there, and I was going to bring this up and talk this out to see if this is feasible. We know in the month of December, there's always a lot of games that mean nothing. We call that zombie football. We see it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What if you take some of those weeks and that where the games don't mean anything near the end of the season, maybe the last couple weeks, maybe even just the last week of the season? Would that give you any flexibility? Could you play with that? I don't know.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, if you've got X amount of games that don't really mean much on, say, the last week of the season, could you just cancel them and rearrange the scheduling to make up games that matter, that have to be played?
I mean, you'd have to do that on the fly.
I don't know. Yeah, and I don't think it would work in every scenario.
No. I think the only way for me that makes sense right now, is because if we go through the weekend and the Broncos and Patriots can't play and they've burned their bye weeks, the flexibility is gone, then you're going to see that, all right, now week 18 and everything gets pushed back a week. I know that the NFL doesn't want to do that, but what choice do they have? Unless we're looking at another midweek game and another push back with the remainder of the schedule for those two teams. I don't know. I mean, it's a mess right now.
Yeah. Or maybe you just table it until the end of the season and then determine if you have to play it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I also know that if the league gets around to wanting to sell Super Bowl tickets, they're going to want a stationary date for that Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
I would think they'd want a stationary date to begin with.
Yeah, and that's probably why they have their heels dug in right now on not extending the season any further. Le'Veon Bell, now a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, was not unemployed long. He signs the one-year deal with the Super Bowl champions. Louis Riddick of ESPN offers his opinion on why Lev works with the Chiefs offense.
He has a runner.
Let me try this again.
Well, he brings that dual threat capability as a runner and receiver, just like Clyde Edwards-Helaire brings to the table, and was the reason why they drafted him. It's just that now they have two guys that can do this. And I think, look, before Damian Williams opted out due to COVID, before training camp began, this is what Brett Veach, the GM, and Andy Reid, the head coach, had in mind, was a two-back type of system where not one guy, especially a rookie who hasn't been through an offseason, gets all of the touches or the majority of the touches. So this makes perfect sense for Kansas City and for Le'Veon. Why wouldn't you want to go to a place like this where you're going to have room to run and be using the passing game? It's a no-brainer. A
lot of great points brought up by Louis Riddick right there. And that's a forgotten man. Damian Williams, remember when the opt-out news came out? He was huge for them in the postseason, especially in the Super Bowl.
That's a great point.
That was a big loss. So for them to draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this does work. If the drop-off in production with Le'Veon Bell was Jets-related and not him, and some people will point to one of those last seasons he had in Pittsburgh where he led the league in touches, and there's that school of thought, if a running back, regardless of where they are in their career, gets that much punishment on their body, they're never the same.
Nope.
But we are seeing more two-back systems. We are seeing more sharing of the ball or spreading around carries and touches in the pass game among running backs, and if anybody can handle it and do it really well, you would expect Andy Reid to be that guy, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And I would think this would be a nice piece to fit into Kansas City. I do think that they've been they started off and they ran the ball really, really well. This Edwards-Helaire kid was a revelation in the first week of the season. I think they need a more dependable rushing attack. And I think their offense has been a little bit up and down. But you know what? It's really not that surprising. It's rarely do you see great teams like this have a great season, win a Super Bowl, then come back and then just dominate week to week to week to week to week. Yeah, I think you'll see the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, look vulnerable at times, maybe lose a couple of games, but they've got so much talent that once they're going to hit their stride. And when they do, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah. Edwards-Helaire, by the way, 81 carries. The second most carries on that team right now is Patrick Mahomes with 24.
Wow.
The next highest running back is Williams with 11. So they have not been spreading the ball because they don't feel good about their personnel. That's what makes sense there.
Yeah.
I noticed this, too, just because I notice weird stuff like this, Bick. In five games this year, the Kansas City Chiefs have allowed their opponent to score a multiple of 10 in every single game. They beat Houston 34-20. They beat the Chargers 23-20. They beat the Ravens 34-20. They beat the Patriots 26-10. And then they lost to the Raiders 40-32.
That's weird. That's really weird.
Isn't that weird?
That's very weird. That's very odd. I don't know what it means.
I don't know either.
But it's very weird.
It is weird. One of the big games this weekend, we'll have our six-pack coming up, and this will be included, spoiler alert, the Green Bay Packers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Rodgers and Brady and an old school superstar quarterback matchup. Here's Aaron Rodgers giving his thoughts on Tom Brady with the Bucs.
You know, he's obviously done it at the highest of levels for so long. He's been, an icon at the position. He's been somebody that we've all looked up to for so many years as a standard of excellence And, you know, I think there's a ton of admiration and respect for the way that he's played the game from so many of us, especially us guys who've been in the same era for so many years with him and gotten to compete with him every now and then, you know, being an NFC guy. But, you know, we've played some really good quarterbacks the first 4 weeks. Obviously playing Drew a couple weeks ago as well, another 40-year-old guy who's been doing it for so long. I think fans should enjoy what they get to watch because there are some guys who, you know, people have been able to watch for 15 plus, 20 plus years at the position who are some of the best to ever play it. And I think it's good that we just enjoy it for what it is, have respect and admiration for the way that we have played over this time and enjoy where we're at in our careers now.
And Rodgers, obviously younger than Brady, mm-hmm. 6 years younger. He hasn't suffered the same amount of visual drop-off. But no. I'll ask this question because I've been guilty of it too. Fawning over what Russell Wilson has done this year, and it's hard not to fawn. He's been unbelievable. Is Aaron Rodgers and his four-game start getting enough attention? They're 4-0. He's 17-3 as a starting quarterback under Matt LaFleur. He's thrown 13 touchdowns and no picks. And people don't really talk that much about the Packers, and they don't really talk about Aaron Rodgers.
People moved on from him.
I think they kind of did.
You're right. It's a good way of putting
it. He's not as fun to love as Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's. I think there's a lot to that, and I think that you know, last year they were 13-3, and they looked like a real soft 13-3. I think there's a lot of factors involved there.
But if 13-3, they get to the NFC Championship game, they start off 4-0, and he apparently elevates his play, and he's done it without his best receiver for a portion of it. Adams has been out.
Yeah. Listen, right. And the fact that Devontae Adams is like the only really good skill player he's got. You remember that whole skill player thing that he was mad about during the draft?
Well, and I mean, Aaron Jones is pretty special at running back. He's really good.
Right. Well,
in terms of receivers.
In terms of receivers. So to me, I look at all the acrimony that has marked the Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers connection, if you will. And like you said, they're 17-3 together. Yeah, that's no joke. So, yeah, I think maybe Aaron Rodgers is kind of people have written him off when he is. He's certainly not showing the attrition from age the way Tom Brady has,
no,
put it that way.
Not at all. Although, again, 6 year age difference.
But speaking of quarterbacks, you know who's going to, did you see what Arch Manning did?
I was seeing some stuff on social media about it.
Yeah, apparently this kid is going to be good. Good. Yeah, this is a Cooper son. So the one Manning that really did not have a career of his own.
Although
as a son who might be the best Manning of them all.
He's carved out a little niche for himself. He's, like his brothers, a very funny guy, good on camera, but apparently this might be the best Manning quarterback we see yet.
Yeah. He's not on social media. He's rejected all scholarships. Yeah.
I didn't know any of that.
It's an interesting story because when you take a look at the difference between Bronny, LeBron's son, who has got like 5.8 million followers, and then Arch Manning, who is just completely in a cocoon. Yeah, well, the Manning family knows how to raise quarterbacks. I mean, Archie's pretty good at it.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess Cooper's pretty good at it, too. Coming up next, last week Steve Keim said stars need to play like stars for the Cardinals. We saw some of that, but there's a spotlight shining on one of those stars big time this week. We'll tell you who and why next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.